Ghoulish greetings, guys. The tunes are courtesy of Bobby Mackey, Alien Manor, Destined to Fail, and Fading Point. And I, of course, am your host, Tessa Morrow.
Way back in the 30s, in the little town of Wilder, lived an old man and his lovely little daughter. They ran gambling for a living. It was the best place around. All the men would come and lay their money down. Her daddy was a jealous man, but Johanna fell in love. He kept saying the man dealt a bad hand.
Thanks for stopping by and making Paranormal Prowlers podcast part of your morning, day, night, graveyard shift. Whenever you listen and wherever you are listening from the Pacific to the Atlantic, from mountaintop to tropical paradise, from ranch life to city life, and everything in between, it is greatly appreciated.
Round of applause. This week's city shout-out goes to
El Dorado Hills, California. Durgapur, India, Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, New Kensington, Pennsylvania, Bardstown, Kentucky, and Pamplemousse, Mauritius. Today we dive deep into the Rocker Death series, part 9. Today I will be talking about 4 rockers. Yep, a whole brand new lineup, my friends. So without further delay, here we go. What does Molly Hatchet, Southern Rock All-Stars, Gator Country, and the Ball Brothers Band have in common? Dwayne Roland. He was in every single one of these bands. Born in Jefferson, Indiana, and music was in this man's blood, literally. Both of his parents were musicians. Their instruments of choice were the piano and the guitar. Growing up with music, it's no shocker that he himself would follow in mom and dad's footsteps.
I was at the West Palm Beach Music Festival, and the lineup was Johnny Winter, Vanilla Fudge, Janis Joplin, King Crimson, and the Rolling Stones. It had rained, and I was laying on a piece of plastic. King Crimson was late, so Johnny Winter, Janis Joplin, and the Vanilla Fudge got up and jammed, and I came straight up off that plastic and said, "That's what I want to do." I watched Johnny play, and that was it for me.
So that moment, right then and there at the West Palm Beach Music Festival, he knew his life would change forever. Now, in high school, Dwayne was in a band where his role was as the drummer. That was okay, but he found that his true passion fell more into the guitar category. Not only was he a phenomenal guitarist, but he was also one hell of a songwriter. He co-wrote several big hits, which include Boogie No More and Bloody Reunion. Now, as mentioned, before he was in several bands throughout his music career, he would record 7 albums with Molly Hatchet. Now, Dwayne would go on to take a 10-year break from music, where he focused on other things, but music never left his heart or thoughts or soul. Then, when the business he worked for sold out, he found himself unemployed and he dove right back into the music world. And he was working on several projects. His future looked brighter than ever when he suddenly dies at the age of 53. I'm getting ahead of myself here. Let's back up. Now, at the time of his death, he was part of the band Gator Country, and he was having a blast. Projects were being worked on. He was a happy camper. And you see, this band, Gator Country, included fellow members of Molly Hatchet. So it was just like old times with dear old friends. I mean, how much better can life get, right? Well, sadly, sometimes it seems too good to be true and things happen. And well, yeah, tragedy strikes when Dwayne's wife passes away. Obviously, this is devastating. Anyone in the situation would be a total mess, and rightfully so. Now, swimming in a sea of sadness and life without his beloved, he continues working on projects, staying busy. And I found what would end up being his final interview on Swampland.com. He was interviewed by a man named Michael Buffalo Smith. And sadly, Dwayne actually had to cut the interview short and asked if they could continue and finish it the following week. Unknowingly to Dwayne, Michael, or anyone else, he would die less than a week later, and this would be his final interview. One question Michael asked Dwayne was this: I was sad to hear of the death of your wife last year. Are you doing okay with that? Roland's response was this:
The best I can, man. It was one of the hardest punches I've ever had. All of the deaths lately have been really hard, but to lose your soulmate is the worst of all. I just take it a day at a time, you know, but there will always be a part of me missing.
Another question asked by Michael was this: How did you initially hook up with the guys in Molly Hatchet? Dwayne shared this:
I was working on putting a band together with Banner and Bruce, but that didn't work out. They joined Dave and Steve and then Danny. And at this point, I was in another band called the Ball Brothers Band. Dave didn't show up for one of Hatchet's gigs, and Banner called me to fill in so they could get paid for the night. They and their management were thinking about going to three guitar players, so they came down from Macon to hear me play, and after that I was asked to join.
So, I mean, it's very heartbreaking. You never know when your time is up. Dwayne Roland figured, hey, why not wrap up the interview in a few days? I have other things going on at the moment, too busy to finish this up. You're not thinking, well, shit, I may not be here next week, so I better get this shit done today. We as human beings at times push things off. We're all guilty of it. I know I am. I'll do that tomorrow. I'll go visit so-and-so next week. Well, sometimes, maybe you're not around next week, or maybe so-and-so's not around next week. Maybe things just happen. Sometimes those plans we have never happen. I can only imagine what went through Michael Buffalo Smith's head when he heard of Dwayne Roland's death. Horrible stuff for sure. Now, what's really interesting to me is I could not find, for the life of me, any official cause of death when it comes to Dwayne. All I see is natural causes, but come on, dude was only 53 years old. In my opinion, that's still pretty damn young. I mean, what exactly did this gentleman die of? His wife had died a year prior to his own death, and I pray and believe that they had a beautiful reunion and are together once more. Dwayne Roland passed away due to natural causes on June 19th of 2006 in St. Augustine, Florida. His bandmates remember a man that put his all in their music. Bruce Crump, the Molly Hatchet and Gator Country drummer, who passed away due to throat cancer in 2015 at age 57, also young, shared this: During all that time, Dwayne was the constant. I can't imagine playing Molly Hatchet music without Dwayne Roland. It just wouldn't be the same. Molly Hatchet and Gator Country singer Jimmy Farrar, who died due to heart failure in 2018 at age 67, still young, had this to say about Roland. He had a heart as big as Texas and a talent twice that big. Not only was he a colleague, but he was one of the best friends I have ever had, and he will be sorely missed. To say that Randy Carr lived for music was an understatement. He was born in Santa Monica, California, and he would begin playing drums at the young age of 12. He would play the role of the mighty drummer in many California local bands, including The Mechanics, which, by the way, was actually considered to be the very first punk band coming out of Fullerton, California. He was also in 16 Tons, Silicon Silos, and Social Distortion. Yes, music was indeed his passion. Besides living it up in the music world, he was also a drum instructor, and he even wrote a book, and it was titled Advanced Grooves for the Advanced Drummer, which he used in his classes. I knew a guy when I would buy books for universities back in the day, like over a decade ago, a professor from Stanford. He was like my favorite guy to work with. He was awesome. He would write his own law books and then teach those in class. And he also wrote a couple of other novels. But I mean, really, that's so genius in my opinion. Impressive stuff for sure. He lived music. He breathed music. You really gotta love when someone is so passionate about something. He dabbled with the guitar as well, but, you know, by golly, it was the drums that was his go-to instrument. We all have our favorites, right? He enjoyed using a four-piece drum set. And after a 1995 show in Los Angeles, Randy is mentioned in an article of Los Angeles Times by Mike Bohem, and he said this: Social Distortion's set was the longest and by far the finest of the day. 55 minutes of dark majesty powered by a new drummer, Randy Carr, who played his first major gig with the band and helped Social Distortion churn and drive with impressive force and fresh suppleness. I mean, come on, you guys, 55 minutes? 5 minutes shy of an hour of just drumming out? How did his arms not fall off? That's impressive for sure. Now, sadly, 7 years later, on March 27th, 2002, Randy Carr would die in Irvine, California, a little over 2 hours away from his birth city of Santa Monica. His cause of death is Cushing's disease. And at the time of his death, he was only 45 years old. Yeah, that's just 2 years older than me. Horrible stuff. Dennis Danell came out of Seattle, where many beloved rockers emerged from, including one of my all-time favorites, Chris Cornell. Hello. Dennis was a guitarist and a bassist, and while in high school, him and his good friend Mike Ness, they form a band, Social Distortion. Yep, Randy Carr, who I just talked about, his bandmate Dennis and Mike Ness, the singer, they were the actual founding members of this band. When they formed the band, it was decided that Dennis would play guitar. He had not played a guitar before, but he learned how, and he kicked major ass, and he would stay with Social Distortion until his untimely death. Now, because he hadn't played the guitar before, two of his band members, they actually quit the band. They didn't want to waste time and sit around waiting for someone to learn how to play an instrument that they had probably never touched before in their life. But you know what, my friends? Patience, it's well worth it because he was rather incredible, and they took off from there. I'm sure those two dudes who quit probably regretted that decision, but they did okay as they moved on to other bands and continue rocking out to this very day. You always come back for more. Like you don't know how this fucking ends. Now, you know, life was good. He was still with Social Distortion and had just moved into a new home, or was in the process of moving, which is always exciting, you know? And sadly, tragedy strikes. He's in his driveway when he collapses and dies. It's bad signs. You crawl back in my bed and you're Dennis's cause of death, the band's manager had shared, was a cerebral aneurysm, but the official COD from the coroner's office said it was from a heart condition that he had. Dennis Danell, co-founder of Social Distortion, dies in Newport Beach, California on February 29th of 2000. At the time of his death, he was only 38 years old. Our final rocker for the part 9 of the Rocker Death series is Jim Morrison. Now, Morrison made an appearance in episode 217 titled When Tragedy Strikes, the infamous 27 Club Curse Part 1, and episode 240 titled Resting Eternally at Pere Lachaise Cemetery. Now, Jim Morrison was born in Melbourne, Florida, and Jim was as talented of a man as they come. He was a filmmaker, frontman and singer for The Doors, a songwriter, and a poet. He took life by the reins, and by golly, he rode hard. He was a very passionate person about all of these things. Now, Jim's father was a naval officer. Later, he would become a U.S. Navy Rear Admiral. This two-star flag officer rank is no easy feat, as the Navy is only able to have 160 active duty flag officers. His mother and father, they were living in Hawaii, where Steve Morrison was stationed, and he was at Pearl Harbor that fateful day on December 7th of 1941, and he bore witness to those ever horrific attacks. Now, Jim, he was a bright young man, but he had his demons at an early age as well. And I quote allthatsinteresting.com. Although he kept his grades up and liked to read and write, Morrison also experimented with alcohol at a young age. When he graduated high school, he reluctantly went to college at UCLA and only stuck around to graduate because he wanted to avoid getting drafted to fight in the Vietnam War. But once Morrison was free in the world, he turned to music. He spent his days after graduation in 1965 writing lyrics, doing drugs, and hanging out in the California sunshine. He also assembled a band with three others that they called The Doors, inspired by a William Blake quote, "There are things that are known and things that are unknown in between our doors," unquote. Not only was Jim Morrison's life a mess at the moment due to drugs, but he was stuck in an ever so toxic relationship as well. Enter Pamela Corson, a heroin addict. It's hard when you are with someone and both of you are doing things that aren't good for the body, for the soul. And I'm not saying this happened, but when one tries to clean up their act, but the other doesn't, and they're still around. But when you have two toxic individuals together, that is just a fatal kind of thing going on there. Like when I want to lose some pounds and I try to eat a little better, it's hard if the person I'm living with orders a big fat pizza with my favorite toppings, which by the way are extra pepperoni, green chili, jalapenos, and black olives. Eh, yeah, now I'm hungry. But you get the idea. Moving on. Now Morrison, while at a show one day, he reveals himself on stage. Now, you know, this was a little more than the crowd of concert goers had asked for. And due to this indecent exposure incident, Jim found himself in hot water. Legal troubles. Not too long after his legal issues, I would say a couple years later, he, along with Pam, they moved to Paris. Now, he seems to thrive in Paris. He is good at keeping in touch with family and friends back in the United States. He calls them and he writes them often. And images of Morrison shortly before his death, they show him looking happy and healthy. Many people were actually really shocked when he died at the young age of 27 years old. But people close to him, who knew him well, while saddened, of course, were not altogether shocked at his demise. I found an article in People magazine about his mysterious death. Quote, According to The Independent, Morrison's girlfriend Corson discovered his body in the bathtub of their Paris apartment, and she called Alain Rane, a photographer and friend of Morrison's who had recently moved to Paris, in hysterics, saying that the singer wasn't breathing. She explained that the previous day, the two went to the movies and ate Chinese food before returning to the apartment to snort heroin. In the early morning, Morrison was having difficulty breathing, but Corson left him in the bathtub and went back to sleep, only to find him dead a few hours later. When firefighters arrived on the scene, they found Corson weeping over Morrison's body in the bathtub, and he had blood around his nose and mouth and wasn't breathing, per the publication. Unquote. Now, this whole thing is disturbing to me. What really just pisses me off to no end is when help is not called immediately. Pamela, and I hate to blame dead people, really I do, but what the hell was Pamela thinking? When she saw Jim in the bathtub having issues, clearly he's struggling to breathe, he supposedly just snorted heroin with her, so there's drugs in his system, you call for help. You don't pussyfoot around. But in her heroin-induced mind, she was probably thinking, man, if I call for help, if the thought of calling for help crossed her mind, that is, I can get in trouble and arrested for being under the influence of drugs. And it really just makes me mad because that actually is what happened to my friend. I've mentioned her before, but when they were having a going away party for her and she went outside to have a cigarette and she didn't come back in, nobody bothered to call for well over an hour, maybe 2 hours, let alone go looking for her. And because they were doing drugs. And it's just kind of like, okay, this person went missing and you're not going to call for help because you're doing something you shouldn't be doing in the first place. You have to put that aside and think that a human life may be at risk here. So you're going to do all you can to help this person. You know, I always think maybe if they called for help immediately, maybe she could have been saved, my friend. And she ended up being raped and murdered. I don't know if Jim Morrison could have been saved. Who knows? We'll never know. If she called for help, he could have survived possibly. Who knows? Chances of survival are obviously much greater if help had been called. And she called a photographer friend instead of calling 911? If Jim Morrison was in the care of professionals like EMTs, paramedics, and doctors versus stuck in a apartment alone with a high, unstable woman, he was a goner. He was doomed. So how did Jim Morrison really die? It's hard to know when they don't conduct autopsies in the location where he died, Paris. Adding into the mix, the only witness who could give any info was changing her story left and right and was probably so drunk and so on heroin when it did happen that she's as useful as snow gloves in the middle of summer in the most humid of places. In the same article, I read this, quote, French authorities ruled that Morrison died from natural causes, a heart attack, possibly aggravated by excessive drinking, per the official report. And because there were no signs of foul play, they did not perform an autopsy before Morrison was buried. Despite this, the musician's friends and family, as well as fans, didn't believe it was the true cause, speculating that it was a heroin overdose instead. The circumstances around Morrison's death became more unclear as Corson's account of what happened that night conflicted over time. In some cases, she told friends that Morrison, who was open about his disdain for the drug, was regularly using heroin during their time in Paris. In others, the night he died was the first night he tried heroin. Sometimes she'd say that Morrison had accidentally snorted the drug by mistake, believing it was cocaine. And in other instances, she'd say heroin played no role in Morrison's death. Unquote. Well, see, that too is frustrating. You're changing your story left and right. What is it? Was it the alcohol? Was it the heroin? Was it a mix? Was he really just having like asthmatic issues, respiratory issues, and he couldn't breathe? Was it something else? We don't know. We never will, probably. But, you know, when you have somebody like Pamela Corson changing her story, it's a horrible thing. Horrible. Yeah. Now, I said this for the 27 Club, and I'm going to say it again. No autopsy was conducted, as it is not required by French law, which I personally think is just absolutely ridiculous. I have a lot of people in France who listen in, and no offense when I say this, but that's insane to me. An autopsy is very crucial, very important. Just because somebody's not obviously murdered doesn't mean that they shouldn't be checked upon. You know, an autopsy, very crucial for sure. So what is every death? Just simply written off as a heart failure? Hard work a day. I had to write cause of death heart failure a few dozen times. So we may never know what the official COD is for Jim Morrison. What really took place in that Paris apartment remains a mystery to this very day, and we most likely will never know what happened. What is known is that sometime on July 3rd of 1971, Jim Morrison breathed his last breath, and that his official cause of death is entered as heart failure. Dying in Paris, away from family, away from friends, away from fans, and it is there in Paris that he rests for all eternity. His girlfriend, Pamela, she would also die at age 27. And unlike Morrison, she did have an autopsy. And her cause of death, no shocker, was a heroin overdose.
And that concludes another fantastic podcast. Legend has it, if you don't tune in, I'll be returning to haunt you. So make sure to tune in for the next episode.
Did you enjoy this week's episode? Listen to the others. They are all phenomenal. Haven't heard every single one yet? No worries. You can catch up and binge listen to your heart's fright and delight by hitting up any of those podcast platforms, such as Deezer, Blueberry, CastBox, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Player FM. Basically, wherever you may roam to hear your other spooky podcasts, you'll probably find Paranormal Brothers podcast lurking in the background. Thanks, everyone, and
I will see you next week. Rock the fuck on, baby.